Welcome to Heart of the Matter, the program which is committed to telling you the truth. The truth about who must do what and why if the Palestine problem, the cancer at the heart of international affairs, is to be cured before it consumes us all. My guest this week is the Reverend Stephen Sizer. He is one of the world's leading authorities on the subject of Christian Zionism and evangelical Christian fundamentalism in all of its forms. In his book, Christian Zionism, Roadmap to Armageddon, he shows how elements within the Christian Zionist movement have become the most powerful and destructive force at work in America today. Before we come to grips with Christian Zionism and other forms of Christian evangelical fundamentalism, can I ask you, for contrast, to summarize the position on Israel-Palestine of what I'll call the traditional or mainstream Christian church in the Western world. That's the Roman Catholic Church as headed by the Pope and the mainly Protestant Anglican Church as led by the Archbishop of Canterbury. Is the position, for example, that Israel should withdraw from all of the Arab land it occupied in 1967?
The mainline churches tend to hold to the rule of international law rather than using the Bible to explain or favour a particular political solution today. So the mainline churches do uphold international law and would insist on the 67 borders being the legitimate borders of Israel and Palestine.
You take your stand on international law, basically?
Yes, as a reflection of the moral code in both the Old and New Testament as to how we should treat other people.
Okay, and what is the traditional mainstream Christian view on the circumstances of the creation of the State of Israel? I mean, does it accept, for example, that Israel was created mainly by Zionist terrorism and ethnic cleansing, and that as a result of that ethnic cleansing, the Palestine refugee problem was created? Does it accept that?
It does now. Although in the 1940s and 50s there was strong support for Zionism from all of the mainline churches because they were living with the legacy of the Holocaust, and therefore they saw the birth of the nation of Israel as giving hope to the Jewish people. But over the years and over the decades they've increasingly recognized that it's the Palestinians who've suffered.
Have we ever had a senior mainstream Christian church leader using the phrase ethnic cleansing?
No, I'm afraid not yet.
Do you see that day coming when they will?
I doubt it, to be honest with you. Our Christian leaders in the Anglican, the Methodist, the Roman Catholic Church come under intense lobbying from the Israeli community whenever they speak out on Israel-Palestine.
So are we saying that, let's name the office, that the Archbishop of Canterbury might like to say, yes, I do appreciate that the truth of history is that there was ethnic cleansing, but it's too politically dangerous for me to say.
Yes, entirely the same reason that you won't find politicians in office saying the same thing. It's usually when they retire, like Jimmy Carter and others, who speak their mind.
Right,
today.
Well, that takes us where we need to go, right on to the phenomenon of Christian Zionism and other evangelical Christian fundamentalists. First of all, Stephen, what is its strength in numbers and congregations, and where are they mainly?
It depends whether you are looking at it critically or as an advocate. Critics like Dale Crowley, a Washington journalist, says 25 to 30 million Americans support Christian Zionism. People like John Hagee, pastor of San Antonio's Cornerstone Church in Texas, 18,000 members, he argues he has access to 99 million homes on a weekly basis. So we estimate,
which is probably true.
It's probably true, but that's the influence. Yeah. The hardcore is probably 30 to 50 million supporters, predominantly in the southern states of America, also in Canada, also in South Africa. There was a strong link between the South African apartheid regime and the Zionists. Holland, because of the Dutch Reformed Church, Sweden, and to some extent in Britain. That's the dominant area.
Will you explain in simple everyday language how the evolution of Christian fundamentalism's commitment to Zionism's colonial enterprise came about?
Yes, it began as a movement in the early 19th century in Britain when a group of Christian leaders began to speculate about how Napoleon could fit within God's plan for the world. Napoleon had conquered most of Europe, he'd imprisoned the Pope, executed the Catholic priests.
And I learned from your book that he was the first to have the idea of setting up a Jewish state,
yes,
right?
He did. And he set the price or the benchmark. He wanted Jewish support to defeat the British.
To screw the British Empire.
Exactly. When the British defeated Napoleon, they realized they needed Jewish help to defeat the Russians and the Germans. And so there was a coalition of political pragmatism among Christian leaders, political leaders in Britain, people like Shaftesbury, David Lloyd George, Lord Balfour, and Christian fundamentalists who believed that Britain was fulfilling its destiny in assisting the Jews back to the land.
But could we say that the politicians were actually only using religion? It was really the vested interest.
Yes, they wanted to secure British trade routes to India and Africa, but they found within the churches great enthusiasm for the idea. We talk about the new American century. Well, 100 years ago, it was the new British century. The British Empire was the most dominant, influential colonial enterprise in the world. And the idea spread that if we support the Jews back to the land, it will secure our control and consolidate our control in the world.
Is it correct to say that historically, Christian fundamentalists of all kinds were the classic Jew haters because they said the Jews killed Jesus, and that today Christian Zionism's only interest in the Zionist state of Israel is in assisting it to become the instrument for bringing about the end of the world, the final battle between the forces of good and evil at Armageddon as foretold by the Bible? That's their only real concern, is it?
It is among some. There are three strands within Christian Zionism today. There are what we would call the evangelistic Christian Zionists who seek to convert Jews or help Jews come to faith in Christianity. They have a love for the Jewish people, and they are most concerned about the past and the suffering of the Jewish people. The dominant group are what we would call the Armageddonites, or the apocalyptic Christian Zionists. They are most influential because they write the popular book speculating about the end of the world, Tim LaHaye, Hal Lindsey, and they're the dangerous ones. They truly are encouraging the Jews back to the land because somehow God's going to protect them, even though there's going to be a nuclear war in the Middle East. The third group are the political pragmatists, people like John Hagee, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell was an advocate, who are in bed with the Israeli leadership, and they are advocating on behalf of the State of Israel in the American establishment, in the White House. They don't want an Armageddon war, but they do want a strong Israel because they believe this is how they're going to ensure a strong America. What one has to understand is that the apocalyptic scenario of Christian Zionists is one where they believe the Bible says there is going to be a war in the end of time, a battle between the nations, and because it's going to happen, you can become very fatalistic about let's get on with it.
Let's even help it.
Exactly. The dilemma Christian Zionists face is how they view the Jewish people. There is, as you observe, they flip between love of the Jews and a hate of the Jews, or a form of anti-Semitism.
Well, I was going to use exactly that phrase. I mean, the notion of convert or be destroyed was the message of the Spanish Inquisition to the Jews in 1492, and many who stayed in Spain were destroyed. So could it not be said that certainly the strands you've identified in Christian Zionism, they actually are classical anti-Semitism in disguise?
You could say that. I think if I was sitting in the shoes of a Christian Zionist, bear in mind that most of their advocates have never left America. They depend entirely on the TV screens for their world news and their perception of the Middle East. And therefore, they are very removed from the actual human suffering that takes place on a daily basis in Gaza or the West Bank. And therefore, it's almost like a virtual video game rather than in touch with the real human suffering of the people on the ground.
That's the America I know, Stephen. The obvious question arising from what you've just said is why did Jewish political Zionism make this alliance with Christian Zionism and other Christian fundamentalism? The short answer, it seems to me, is that Zionism has always been ready, willing and able to use or be used by any power that would serve its interests. Now, on its own, in America especially, the Zionist lobby is very powerful, but it's even more powerful when it's in association with the Christian Zionist lobby. What's your assessment of the political significance of the lobbies separately, but also those two lobbies together?
The professional lobbyists and those with money are clearly the Zionists, the AIPAC, for example. That clearly is the most influential aspect. But around that are the Christian Zionists who have the troops, if you like, the pawns. So John Hagee said recently, 5 million Jewish Americans in partnership with 50 million American Christians, it's a match made in heaven. The 50 million are the ones who influence the politicians at the ballot box.
But how would you describe the consequences of this lobbying on American policy for the Israel-Palestine conflict?
It's deeply, deeply detrimental for peace and justice in the Middle East, because America is following Israel's foreign policy. It's doing Israel's dirty work. You won't find a single serving US politician critical of Israel in public, because it's political suicide. That shows you the size and the influence of this movement.
In my understanding, the essence of the core message of what I've called the mainstream Christian religion is love and justice. Could it not be said that in their unqualified support for greater Israel, right or wrong, Christian Zionists and other Christian fundamentalists are representing the opposite, hate or at least bigotry and injustice?
Yes, theologians have described Christian Zionism as a heresy because it clearly departs from the teachings of Jesus and the apostles. Jesus called his followers to be peacemakers, not widow makers. He called them to a ministry of reconciliation, not confrontation. So I regularly speak to Muslim audiences and explain that if people claim to be Christians and are walking in the opposite direction to the teaching of Jesus, they have no right to that name.
What do their positions vis-a-vis Israel tell us about Christian Zionists and other fundamentalists? Are they merely in error in their interpretation of the Bible, or are they actually deluded to the point of clinical madness?
Probably both. I think that the majority of Christian Zionists I meet are simply naive. They've never read the Bible, they believe what their leaders tell them, and they buy what Fox News and NBC and everyone else tells them on the news. But they are firmly convinced that God is blessing them and their country materially because they are caring for the Jewish people. It goes way, way back.
But we've already said they're not really caring for the Jewish people.
No, no. But it goes way, way back to a promise God made to Abraham. I'll bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. They take that as meaning today, if we look after the Jewish people, give them whatever they want, God will look after us. So it's actually a very materialistic
theology. And annihilate the Jews later if they don't convert.
Well, you know, they're in God's hands.
Stephen, if he was among us today, what do you think Jesus would say to the Christian fundamentalists and the Christian Zionists?
He's already told us, because he had problems with a similar group in the first century, the Zealots, who thought that they could bring about God's will on earth by force. One of their advocates today, Gershon Salomon, said the Messiah will not come by himself, we should bring him by fighting. And they believe that. Jesus rebuked
them. That's madness.
It's madness, but it's also a very materialistic, earthbound theology. And it's one that Jesus repudiated. At his trial before Pilate, Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it was, my followers would come to my defense. My kingdom is from another place." The kingdom of God is in our hearts, and it is heavenly. And as we follow Jesus, and as we seek to live out our faith in terms of love and forgiveness, reconciliation, and working for justice for the poor and marginalized, we are bringing heaven on earth.
And what about God himself? Now, if the terrible wrong that was being done to the Palestinians and is still being done to the Palestinians by Jewish political Zionism is in accordance with God's will, which is what Christian Zionists and other Christian fundamentalists say, would it be reasonable for fair-minded, rational human beings to conclude that God himself is without love and justice and is something of a monster?
That would be a logical deduction if their theology was correct. I go back to their own scriptural teachings in the Old Testament and try and show that God has made it very plain, for example, in Micah, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God? That's our mandate, to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. The message of the Old Testament prophets was very clear. The message of Moses was very clear. Obey God and you can stay on my land. The land belongs to God. This earth is his, not ours. Obey and you can stay. Rebel and treat people badly and you are out. You'll be kicked out of the land. So I turn their theology on its head and say, if you're going to take the Bible seriously, I fear another exile from the land unless Israel learns to share the land with the Palestinians, unless they treat them as equals and learn to live together in harmony.
Because the first exile, as the really ultra-Orthodox religious Jews and Torah Carta say, is they say, yes, God gave us the land, but he promised us the land, but it was a conditional promise.
It was conditional.
We did not treat the inhabitants well, so God said, you're out. I mean, that's the point you're making.
All the way through the message of the prophets. And therefore, if we're going to apply the Bible and take it seriously, if we want to know God's heart, that's the message today. We can enjoy his blessings as we treat others created in his image in the way that we would want to be treated.
So are you saying that by its behavior at the moment, the Zionist state of Israel is setting Israeli Jews up to be exiled again?
Yes, I am, unfortunately. Unless they learn to repent and recognize, if you like, the writing on the wall, and recognize that they must share the land, and find reconciliation.
And
we've done it in Europe.
Treat those they live among and who live among them equally.
Yes. We've done it in Europe after the Second World War. We've seen it in South Africa. We've seen it in Northern Ireland. And that's our responsibility.
But you could say, Stephen, we didn't have the Holocaust.
We didn't. But the Holocaust has been perpetuated over the last 40 or 50 years. It's the Palestinians who are going through their Nakba now. And one wrong doesn't right another wrong.
As things are, do you think that we are on course for a clash of civilizations, Judeo-Christian v. Islamic, which some Christian Zionists are working and praying for?
I think that that is what we must work to avoid. I don't believe in the essential dogma of the clash of civilizations. I believe that there is evil in our world today. It's in our hearts, it's in our society, and we see it on the front pages of our newspapers. But God has called us to work against evil and to refute and defeat evil. And we can. We can defeat it with good, just as you can turn darkness into light by lighting a candle. And therefore we must work against those who want to polarize our world on religious grounds. We must speak to the common humanity that we have and recognize that the Middle East will only find reconciliation when there is justice for the Palestinians. There will be peace for Israelis.
Do I take it you wouldn't rule out the real prospect of a clash of civilizations if we don't address the problems?
Yes, I do, because I see, if you like, a Christian Zionist movement within Islam. There are those within the Islamic world who are apocalyptic, just as much as there are Jewish friends.
So we've got to stop the madmen on both sides, is what you're saying.
In the same way that as ordinary people in Northern Ireland took control of their destiny, they marginalized the extremists and made it very clear to those committed to violence that they didn't represent them and they would not tolerate their behavior.
But it's not that simple, Stephen, because Northern Ireland is a good analogy. The British Army didn't defeat the IRA. The IRA called off their campaign when the host community would no longer support them. But that only happened because the British government addressed the core grievance of the Catholic community.
Yes.
So addressing the core grievance of the Palestinians is surely the key.
It is. And that's where I think we must see the United Nations imposing its will on the Israelis.
In your writings, you give the impression, or at least you give me the impression, that you'd not be altogether surprised if one day extreme Jewish political Zionists, perhaps in collusion with Christian Zionists, blew up and destroyed the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. Now, such a diabolical event would undoubtedly make a clash of civilizations much more likely than not. Do you really think the destruction of Islam's most holy places in Jerusalem is a possibility?
There have been over 100 armed assaults on the Haram al-Sharif since 1967, and on not a single occasion has a chief rabbi or an Israeli prime minister criticized those activities. Ariel Sharon's visit in 2000 to the Haram al-Sharif with 1,000 troops was part of a strategy to bring down the Israeli government.
It was a deliberate provocation.
It was a deliberate provocation. There are Christian groups supporting the Temple Mount faithful who are seeking to destroy the Dome of the Rock now.
There are reports, Stephen, and there have been over the last several years, of quiet excavation underneath to bring the thing down. Do you have sources?
That's possible. I think some are praying for an earthquake. But interestingly, last year the Supreme High Court in Israel gave permission to the Temple Mount faithful to enter the Haram al-Sharif with their supporters. And twice a year they take an articulated lorry to the Old City with 3.5-ton stones on the back, which they believe are going to be the foundation stones for the new temple. Twice a year they seek to enter the Haram al-Sharif and start the rebuilding. So this is more likely a question of when it happens, not whether. And yes, it will lead to a conflagration between the
faith communities. That is such a terrifying thought.
It is, and it's one that we must work against. We must work with our Jewish friends and our Muslim friends to ensure that these extremists are not given the opportunity.
Stephen, do you think that it really is in the best interests of the Jews of the world that they demand that political Zionism terminate its unholy alliance with Christian fundamentalism and all the Christian evangelicals?
Some of our Jewish friends, and I know some organizations who are saying that, they're saying that this Christian Zionist support for the state of Israel is bad news for the Jewish people worldwide. Whether they are successful is another matter. As long as the Israeli leadership has such a close alliance with the US leadership, political and military, and as long as organizations like AIPAC have such influence in the White House and the Senate, then ordinary voices, be they Jewish or Christian, are not going to have much sway.
In conclusion, and you've already touched upon it, I'd like to put to you my theory about why tens of millions of Americans buy this Christian fundamentalist nonsense. I think it's because they've got great big holes in their lives where meaning and purpose ought to be. They tried mainstream religion, it didn't do anything for them. They've tried worshipping the god of materialism, consumerism, and that hasn't satisfied them. So along comes the nonsense of Christian fundamentalism, and it apparently fills this hole. Do you see merit in that theory?
Yes. It gives certainty to their lives. It gives the conviction that God is at work in our world today, that the newspapers and the Bible somehow are saying the same thing. Carefully selected Bible passages are used by Christian Zionist leaders to say this is that, when it's got nothing to do with it. But it does give a sense of immediacy, a sense of purpose, and a sense of destiny, manifest destiny. God is at work in our generation, Jesus is coming back soon, and somehow we can help bring this about through our relationship with Israel. That's their agenda.
The essence of the core message of mainstream Christianity is love and justice. That being so, could it not be said that with their unqualified support for Israel, right or wrong, Christian Zionists and other Christian fundamentalists are representing the opposite, hate or at least bigotry and injustice? When I put that question to the Reverend Sizer, he said, yes, theologians have described Christian Zionism as a heresy because it clearly departs from the teachings of Jesus and the apostles. Jesus called on his followers to be peacemakers, not widowmakers. And when I asked whether Christian Zionists and other Christian fundamentalists are merely in error in their interpretation of the Bible, or deluded to the point of clinical madness, Stephen's short answer was, probably both. That's all for this week. From this heart to yours, good night.